Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to NBC Sports Philadelphia. The guests you want to hear from, the Phillies information you need. It's At the Yard with Jim Salisbury.
Shane Victorino had played in two different organizations, the Dodgers and the Padres, and he was essentially a cast-off when he came to Philadelphia. But he will tell you that Philadelphia is the place where his dreams came true. It's the place where he became a Major League regular, an All-Star, and of course, a world champion, one of the most popular Phillies, really, of all time. Beloved by the fans for his big personality and his constant hustle and his productive bat. Hello again, and welcome back to this special edition of At the Yard. I am Jim Salisbury, and we are presented by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. If it is your heart, demand Deborah, and visit demanddeborah.org. Also, a reminder to please subscribe to At the Yard wherever you listen to podcasts. Recently, NBC Sports Philadelphia proudly aired World Champions, story of the 08 Phillies. In that documentary, you saw a big portion of my interview with Shane Victorino, and now you'll hear my full sit-down with the ever-popular Flyin' Hawaiian. Shane, you were a guy who really had to fight for your shot in the Phillies organization. How would you describe your journey through the minors before you finally got your shot at playing time in 2006?
I would describe it as probably the majority of what we all go through, you know, and that's the ups and downs, the goods and the bads of you know, long bus rides, playing in cities that, you know, little towns around America. You know, so I try to tell people it's no different than, I would say, majority of guys that come up through the system that have to go through the process of becoming young boys to become young men who then become, hopefully, have long and big and joyful careers. I think that's how I would express my journey here. But it's those things that I learned through the process of losing, failing, going up and down. It helped me at that big league level. And I think that's how I explain that journey. It's, you know, so it's no reason for me to sit here and talk about it, describe it. A lot of people know what it's about.
But knowing your story, you were with the Padres and the Dodgers, you're a Rule 5 guy, you come to Philadelphia, you go to Scranton, you're the MVP of that league. In my opinion, I would say becoming a Philly, entering the Phillies organization as a Rule 5 guy, was the best thing that ever happened to your career.
Absolutely. I think also being a Rule 5 kid and understanding what the first time was, and, you know, being a two-time Rule 5, let's go back to that. I mean, not many kids even get that opportunity, to let alone get a chance to do it once, let alone twice. So, you know, I think what I'm trying to get at is the failures and the things that I've got that taught me through the process. Today you watch, and I feel like, you know, I'm kind of going to go to another point, but, you know, it's kind of all part of it, is you watch today's game and you teach and you watch my son and itself, the failure aspect doesn't get taught no more. In the game of baseball, you fail 7 out of 10 times. If you fail 7 out of 10 times in life, whether it be on a test and all, or whatever it is, what happens? So you're set up to tell yourself, so I think that was part of the process, is learning. So those ups and the downs, the, you know, being the second time through the Rule 5, understanding guys, like I said, get one chance, I get him twice. So to make best on that. The biggest part, truthfully, was that time I got sent down in spring training. Because I said to myself, like, I came here with a different attitude, I came here with different words, I got a chance, and all of a sudden, I'm not part of the plan. But it also made me realize that on the flip side, they just brought me in to win a job in spring training. So why not stay within that organization? And that's why I decided to go to AAA. And, you know, lucky enough, I turned around and was an MVP.
They told the Dodgers, hey, you want this guy back? And the Dodgers said no. And you stayed with the Phillies. Was that a motivator that the Dodgers said no?
I wouldn't say it was a motivator. As I said, that equation which came into play was they brought me here. I was basically on this team. Unfortunately, things didn't work out correctly. That's why I'm not on the team. So I was close enough on the radar at the end of the day. And I called my agent. I spoke with, you know, I just it was more disheartening to hear the Dodgers say that we don't need him. We don't even want him in our minor league system. That was kind of that point where I was like, okay, well, these guys gave me a chance. Why not still go out and prove it? And that's why I went to Triple N Works.
The Dodgers saying no was the best thing that ever happened to you.
Of course.
I think so.
Yes.
As a team, everyone could see the collection of young talent that was coming together. You, Jimmy Chase, Ryan, Cole. You guys chased down the Mets in 07 in that incredible September. What sticks out to you about that first division title?
It was such a high. You know, such a like, we did it. But the run that we had to go on, it was one of those where you sat there and everything had to still continue to go correctly because it was such a great run. And I think we got to the point where we were such on a, you know, the excitement and adrenaline. But I will never take away also that we ran into a team that won 22 out of 23 to get to the World Series. So I'm not going to take away from what that other team that we lost to when we got there. You know, I'm not going to take them away from them being a good team, and they were a great team. I mean, to do the run that they were on also, and that was the Colorado Rockies. So, you know, that's the part where it did teach me the process when we were eliminated because it felt like it was never going to end, and then it ended.
But chasing down the Mets was incredible.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, seven back with, what, 15, 16, or 18 to go? I mean, all we did was, and this was our mentality, we had to worry about ourselves. If we don't take care of what we need to take care of, we cannot look and they can do whatever they want. We have to take care. And our mentality was to what? Was to win every single day. And that's what we did. And that was the part where you look at, you know, the mentality of athletes and the mentality of teams. We were taught, we put pressure on the teams in front of us. Not many people can say they were able to do that. I felt like, yeah, sometimes we were never at the top, you know, at the top. But towards that second half of the season, when that run started happening and you knew that we were coming, there was a fear. There was a, you know, and listening to a guy, Roy Halladay, say in a meeting in when he came over to us and we had that bad outing in Boston, Jamie Moyer gave up one of the longest first innings I've ever remember. And the next day we had a players meeting and everybody wanted to hear him talk. And there was one thing that guy said, and he stood, he goes, I thanks for everybody. And he basically said, when I pitched against the Philadelphia Phillies, I prepare differently. And to hear a guy of that stature, or a guy that you respect as an opponent, say that, that's all we needed to hear was there was a fear factor. There was a factor when the Phillies were coming to town that you better buckle up. And that's the part where you separate yourself. That's the fear. So those are the kind of things that what I remember about this team was like, yeah, we would always love to be out front. Who doesn't? But we knew we were never out of it. You know what I mean? And that's why I think we were able to make a comeback like that in 07 where we just put so much pressure on that team ahead of us. It was like, it can't stop them. But as I said, just as fast as it happened, it came crashing down on us too when we were eliminated.
So you kind of alluded to this, but even though you got swept by Colorado that year in the playoffs, what did that September, chasing down the Mets, getting to the postseason, what did that do for your confidence heading into 08?
I go back to two things that I point out and have always stood out to me about my tenure, kind of this kind of situation. One was when I first came here, and I remember playing against the Mets, I think it was in 05, and ninth inning at home, and all I heard was Mets chants, and I kept saying to myself, like, I'm playing in my home park, and yet I'm hearing an opposing team chant, you know, as we're about to lose this game, and I'm like, how do you change that? And you change that by winning. And that's, so that was one thing. The second time was when we got eliminated by Colorado, and, you know, it all came crashing down to us. But I think for us, a lot of it was immature. A lot of it was not, you know, not being there, not being prepared. And, you know, I go to a quote that Gillick said in 06 when he made the trade of Bobby and Corey Lytle, and I got my chance to play. And I remember Gillick saying, give it 2 to 3 years and this team, we're going to be okay. And, you know, those are two times I remember that situation being that Rue 5 situation or being an 05 coming here, hearing Mets chants. And a GM saying that, those are all little motivating factors to go that led to what 7 happened and led to, you know, 08. A lot of people remember every 5 week left in the season, we were in it. 06, a week left in the season, we were in it. 7, we made the comeback. 8, we go. I mean, you know, you start seeing that trend. But again, it's certain things that I think built. It's having the right guys, too. It don't just happen by talent. You know, you had talent mixed in with heart. I think that was special about this team.
I want to talk about some of your memories of some of the team's big playoff games. What was it like watching Brett Myers, a career 134 hitter, put together an epic at-bat against CC Sabathia, work him for a walk, and then you come up and hit that monster grand slam two batters later against Milwaukee?
I don't know. I mean, surreal. I guess it's, you know, people always try to bring up that moment, and I think to myself, you know, what was it that was going through my mind? And, you know, I just remember telling myself, looking at a teammate in front of me, grind out on a bat, put as much effort into grinding out on a bat, and that was Brett. And I sat there and I go, man, those are the kind of moments you look back upon and goes, he fought and he gritted and he, how do I follow that? You know, how do I not go up there and give up? I cannot. I got to go through the mentality too. I mean, and at that time, CC was immortal. The guy was on top of a pedestal. And, you know, but it's the little things like a bat that might have tired CC for him to miss and I execute on a bad pitch. I mean, those are all the kind of things that make that moment happen. If I don't have a teammate that battles to draw a walk, I don't get to be in that moment. So I think it's a mentality also from being a young kid and understanding that never be afraid to fail. I'm supposed to fail in this situation. I'm supposed to ground out against CC Sabathia. I'm supposed to be out again. But what am I going to do to make it the opposite? Can I make, and I think from my childhood and all the way through my life, I was set up that way. Going back to those moments where I got sent down from being a Rule 5 kid and going back from AAA, sending down to AA, thinking that, man, I don't love this game no more. I don't have that passion. It all resurfaces to moments like that where you go, what do I have to lose? You know, I'm a little boy that grew up on the island of Maui. Like, I'm living a dream. So make it a dream, and hopefully that dream becomes a reality. And I think that's the part. It's a mindset. It's a mentality. But having the guys around me that surrounded us, that made us have that mentality, it's what made it fun. Jim, you're around us. I mean, showing up every day to the ballpark. Was there ever a day you just sit there, this team's not having fun?
You always have fun.
Yeah.
Can you still feel the ball coming off the bat? Can you feel yourself running around the bases and hear the crowd on that grand slam?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll ever leave you. You know, every time you walk out there and you think about that, I mean, you know, every time you see a kid hit a grand slam in a regular game and you sit there and you just go, man, how lucky was I to do that, you know, in some of the biggest games of my life. I mean, you know, it's Jim, sitting there listening to understand some of this stuff. It's dreams that become a reality, you know, and, you know, what is it that made me dream? I don't know. Trying to be a winner. Like, I don't care about the stats. I cared about how I can make myself a winner and make 24 other guys winners. What was it? Going out there and playing hard. It's not that hard. You know what I mean?
Then there was the moment that everyone remembers, NLCS game 4 in LA. You tie it with a 2-run home run. Stairs hits that pinch hit bomb and the dugout went crazy. What are your memories of your home run and then watching Stairs do that later in the inning?
Being prepared. I had a conversation with one of the coaches who was actually with Dodgers when I was in Chicago, and he started talking about statistics. He told me a statistic number of why they threw me a first pitch curveball. Why did Wade flip me a first pitch curveball? And he started breaking down statistics to me. And you know what I told him? I said, there's something called preparation and heart. I wasn't worried about what pitch. I went up there and I probably was not going to swing. That's why your statistics said Shane hadn't swung a first pitch curveball in 500 pitches that was thrown to him that season or whatever. Stupid statistic. But again, it's called heart and preparation. I was prepared and I wanted to be prepared in that moment. What do I have to lose again? I ground out right here. I'm supposed to make it out. But I remember just going in there and hitting, seeing that first pitch curveball come out of his hand and go, huh. And I remember going down on it and hitting it over the fence. And I was like, okay, just get to the outfield. And as it traveled out there, I saw it get over the fence. And I was like, and all I remember is staring at Joel Torre as I jogged around first base. With such like this, don't forget, the guy was a manager when I lost my last one. You know what I mean? When I got the opportunity, I mean, you know, he managed us and we played against Joe, and watching him win all those years in you know, in New York, I said, man, I get to beat and send this guy home. You know, it was one of those moments. I just remember jogging around. And I also said to myself, there was a moment, I think, if I'm not mistaken, prior to that, they had pinch walked me. They intentional walked me earlier. I think it was that game or part of that series. And so when I hit the home run, I was like, that's what you get for pitching to me as I ran around first. And if you see the video, you can see me looking in when I touch first base. I look right in. And, you know, it was one of those moments. I just was like, man, like, yeah, this is it. Like, and then obviously Matt comes up and hit to me one of the farthest balls I've still ever seen hit. But it was fun because Matt had one thing on his mind. And that's another part about being prepared. He's like, Shane, he goes, you go, I might have one pitch, but that one pitch, I promise you, I'm going to try to hit it as far as I can. And I think everybody will ever forever remember how far that ball went off of Broxton. You know, those are the kind of things that's what makes this game fun sometimes. Winning. We're not talking about anything other besides winning. Are we not talking about statistics? What are we talking about, Jim, right now? All winning moments, you know? So that's why it's like, just win, guys.
How about when he came back into the dugout, you guys killed him?
I mean, it was... Sometimes you sit there and you start thinking, is those moments real? Like, highlights that will last forever. When you see a home run in the postseason, when they show it, Matt Stairs is on there for hitting one of the farthest balls. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you can't draw up. But you got to be prepared and you got to be ready for that moment. And that's what made that team special.
So you guys took care of the Dodgers that year pretty easily in Game 5. And then you had to wait around for the ALCS to end. What was the confidence level like heading into the World Series? And be honest, did you have a preference whether it was Tampa Bay or the defending champion Red Sox?
I mean, I don't think it's rocket science. If you're an athlete, what is it all about? You want to beat the best? I mean, you know, you want to beat a storied franchise like the Boston Red Sox. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, fortunate enough for me, I was able to play and understand it a little bit more, you know, in a Boston uniform. But, I mean, I definitely wanted them. But when it didn't happen, we were prepared for whoever. I mean, our confidence were high. I don't think, you know, there was a lot of talk, a lot of buzz, I remember, about, oh, well, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals, I think, I think it was Detroit, or one of those series prior, a couple years prior, where they had a week break, and that was, you know, they came out flat. I think it was Detroit, and St. Louis just waffled them. And I remember going, and that was the talk. Oh, they're going to come out flat. Well, one of our leaders didn't come out too flat because he hit, you know, first inning homer, and we jumped ahead, and everybody was like, whoa. So I think that's what it was, is that team never lacked. We never second-guessed ourselves. We never second-guessed the fact that we had the mentality that if we lose, we lose. Not, or we lose meaning someone else beats us. Not we make mistakes to give the game to the other team. So I think that's what made, again, coming out being ready to go. I mean, there was no second-guessing our mentality.
I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Shane Victorino for NBC Sports Philadelphia's documentary, World Champions, The Story of the 08 Phillies. Coming up, some of the best video from that World Series are shots of you and all the guys sprinting in to jump on the big pile after Lynch gets the last out. You were just screaming as you ran in from center field. Can you describe to me what that moment felt like, running in, screaming, going to jump on the guys?
Felt like I was never going to get there. Really? It felt like one of the longest runs because I think there was so much joy, so much excitement, so much of what you've done your whole life to achieve the ultimate dream, you know, and that's to be a World Series champion. I mean, is there any greater thing in any sport to win a championship at the highest level? I mean, if someone can tell me there is, then I want to go do it. But, you know, and that's any sport, not just the game of baseball. I felt like I was sprinting as fast as I could, going nowhere.
All that and more after this health tip from Deborah Heart and Lung Center.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is At the Yard, the podcast.
So game five of the World Series. How bad was that feel before they stopped the game?
It's got to be up there as one of my worst games ever. And it's sad to say that I'm talking about a World Series game. But sometimes it is what it is. You know, you want to win. You got to get it in. You have all these things that come into play, travel. But, you know, that's why you learn. And I think as the game moves forward, things happen. You know, where they make adjustments, where they make. So it's part of the learning process. But that's probably one of the coldest days I've ever been in my life. I remember standing in the outfield going, please just let's get this third out. Because the rain was starting to, like, freeze up on my arms. I had no sleeves on. You know, being the stubborn kid that I am, don't want to wear no sleeves. And I remember I was frozen. And finally, when they did call the game, I was like, okay, it was great. You know, because it was, I mean, the conditions were terrible. I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses of what happened and what, you know, but it is what it is. The infielders, it was like playing in puddles. I remember, you know, watching guys try to slide, and it's like, you're not going to go nowhere. One ball gets hit there, it's going to stop. So the conditions of the game was, I get it. I think they should have called it earlier or not let it go on as far as it did. But once it got that far, we had to fight through it. You know, we were able to do it. So
now, you know, they stopped the game. You get that 2-day wait. Mm-hmm. Was it torture waiting those 2 days before the restart?
Absolutely. Because you know how close you are. You know, you're there. I mean, it's in your grasp. The reality of playing as a little boy in a backyard and dreaming about a World Series and, you know, all the things that you talk about doing as, okay, it's 3-2, two outs, and it's the game's on the line, and you throw the ball up and you hit, and you're running around in your backyard. It was there. It was within your grasp, but you just couldn't reach for it. So, yes, I mean, we were anxious, but, again, we never changed who we were. I think that's the identity of that team. We never changed it. And what happens when we first come out? There goes Jeff Jenkins. Boom. You know, so I think it's something that was taught. And it's having, again, going back to having the right guys, Jim. I mean, if you don't have the right guys, it's hard to make it work.
So everybody has talked about how electric the ballpark was when Game 5 restarted after those 2 days. What are your memories of the atmosphere that night?
Something I've never experienced. Like I told you earlier, I'm a little boy that grew up on an island that never had anything of that magnitude or understood the magnitude. I never went to a professional baseball game when I grew up. I didn't know what I knew when I saw it on TV and I understood it. But to be in that moment and to understand, as I said, that I remember running out when the game restarted. And as soon as we all came out of the door, you know, guys started coming out of the dugout, the atmosphere in that place was, I mean, like no other. But that's what, I think that's such a factor in a city like Philadelphia. The fans and the passion and the love and the identity of the people, you know, in this city. They just want you to go out there and play hard. And having that on your side, listening to other players from opposing team goes, man, I don't like coming to Philadelphia and playing in Philadelphia. Well, you know what I tell them? Well, I love it because they're on my side. And, you know, you sit there and you start understanding that and you look at those kind of moments and you say, this is what it's all about. This is what I can do this every day, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was amazing. One of the things that jump out about that, remember that play Chase made?
He faked the first and threw home.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your memories of that? Did you have any idea he had that up his sleeve?
I never second guessed Chase. I really didn't. I never, you know, I never second guessed anything our guys did. Or when a guy did something, it wasn't a surprise to me. And that's what made, I think, this team special. It wasn't just the talent. It was the mentality behind the talent. The mentality to learn the game, to study the game, to talk about the game as a team, as a group, have conversations. But again, you got to have the right kind of guys that are willing to do that. And that's what we had. We had the group that we learned from one another. We also had a guy at the helm that let us learn from each other. Charlie was our face, but Charlie just knew us. And so that all trickles down to why we had success on the field.
You had a great view of the chase play. You're in center field.
I was right in. I was running in thinking that I might have to go pick up this ball and actually make a throw home. All of a sudden, I'm like, what is this guy doing? He's doing a spin. All of a sudden, he's faking. And all of a sudden, I see the ball come out of his hand to home. I'm like, oh, my God, he's got him. I said, oh, look at his IQ. Like, you know, I said to myself, look at Chase. This is why you sit and understand what the guy goes through and why he does what he does and why he's still playing today. You know what I mean? He has such an IQ about the game. But he did whatever it took to win. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's one of the coolest plays that I've ever witnessed. To have the mentality and the IQ to already see it happening.
Some of the best video from that World Series are shots of you and all the guys sprinting in to jump on the big pile after Lidge gets the last out. You were just screaming as you ran in from center field with your goofy hat on.
I was cold. My ears needed some cold.
Can you describe to me what that moment felt like, running in, screaming, going to jump on the guys?
Felt like I was never going to get there. Really. It felt like one of the longest runs because I think there was so much joy, so much excitement, so much of what you've done your whole life to achieve the ultimate dream, you know, and that's to be a World Series champion. I mean, is there any greater thing in any sport to win a championship at the highest level? I mean, if someone can tell me there is, then I want to go do it. But, you know, and that's any sport, not just the game of baseball. I felt like I was jogging. I felt like I was sprinting as fast as I could, going nowhere. But because of the excitement, and I think it was more just the fact that I was taking everything in from center field and everything was coming this way, you know, and everything was going to come. And you live for that moment. And as I got closer to the pile, I was like, this is that moment where you dream of jumping on it. I didn't win many championships, Jim, when I grew up. I didn't get to dogpile on many things. I did that day, you know, so it's great.
So, you know, now you win it and there's the whole celebration with the parade, which was awesome. You end up back at the ballpark and Chase drops the WFC. What was that like? What are you thinking when he does that?
Two things. One is, aren't you not supposed to swear on public television? And two was, what are the consequences? But then I said to myself, the magnitude of the moment and what it means for a city like Philadelphia and the people that this city represents, I think it was going to be okay. And that's what I kept telling myself. Okay, I hope Chase doesn't get in trouble. And, you know, he gets away with it. But, you know, it's those kind of moments that define individuals, teams, and a city. And I think that's what makes this team great, is that I think we'll forever have attachment to the city and what the city was about and what the team was about. You know, we embraced the people. I think the city, I mean, I know for a fact, and how the city embraced us as athletes and as players. But again, it's winning.
I mean, talking about embracing, the people were like, I mean, in the parade, they wanted to climb up on the bus and hug you.
The one part of the parade I still remember that will, when, like you said, everything was caving in. It started over as an open stream. And as we got down Broad, it just got tighter and tighter. And I remember one point seeing a horse. The horse is basically backed up to our truck. And I looked at, I think Worth was on my, and I said, J-Dub, I said, this is not good, bro. And next you know it, these guys started moving these horses. And they just started, and I'm like, someone's going to get hurt. Lucky enough, nothing happened. But I just still remember that. And that from that day on, I really understood even more, you know, what it meant to be a champion in a city like Philadelphia. As I said, I didn't win too many championships growing up, so I didn't understand that feeling. But what it meant to bond with this city and what it meant to these people, it was, I mean, how can I forget?
So you've kind of alluded to this, but just to back. Mm-hmm. So you guys had great, great teams. I mean, all those divisions, a bunch of great teams. Why do you think the 08 team was the one that ultimately got the job done?
There is no answer for that. I mean, it happens. We were lucky enough to be that team. You know, I can't say why we didn't do it on other years. You know, it just so happened it was our year. I mean, it's hard, you know, to point a finger, truthfully. I mean, and that's how lucky I am as a player to say that I played for so many years with so many great teams, that I really, I mean, luck, you know, things falling into place and things happening your way. I don't know. I mean, I can't really put a finger on why, you know, why we won in 08 and why we didn't in some of the other years. On paper, you can say some of the other years we had way better talent. But, hey, I got it in 08. That's all I worried about, you know. I wish I had more, believe me.
Every guy we've talked to talks about how tight that clubhouse was. You know, even though you had superstars, nobody acted like they were above the team. Is that how you remember it?
Absolutely. No matter what you had, no matter what accolade you had, you put that all aside when you walked in that door. I think that's an absolute correct answer and analogy of that team. You know, you had MVPs, you had rookies of the years, you had Cy Young winners, you had All-Stars, you had Silvers. I mean, there was not one award, Gold Glove. I mean, there was not one award that wasn't in that room. But those awards all meant nothing. You know what I mean? And that's through my tenure, what made those years great is, you know, and even 08, I mean, it just doesn't happen. You know, you don't have that. There's always, well, I want to, yeah, well, our one-upping was just making us that much better. Like, I pushed Jimmy. Jimmy pushed me. We would always go into seasons talking about, all right, I'm going to steal more bags than you all off season. Oh, I'm going to get more than you. All right, we'll see. You know, and it's all internal, you know, pushing each other to be better. What am I going to do to make Jimmy better? What am I going to do to make Chase better? What do I have to do to make myself better so I make the rest of these guys better? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Why was Charlie Manuel the right guy to manage that club?
I tell people this a lot. I think Charlie knew us better than we knew ourselves. And again, I think it's not about the statistics. It's not about this. It's about knowing individuals. And I remember this distinctly. There was one time in Atlanta. I forget what year it was. You know, yeah, I was kind of struggling, but it wasn't one of those where I'm like, okay, and I showed up to the ballpark early as always, and I go, oh, I'm not in the lineup today. So I walk in the office, I said, Chuck, why am I not in the lineup tonight? Ah, Vic, you know, son, I think you just need some time off, and I just think you need a mental. I feel like you're just grinding mentally. You're just, you know. I was like, no, Chuck, I'm good. Listen to me, son. Okay. So I said, he goes, just be prepared. I don't want you to go take BP. I don't want you to do eight, whatever. Sit back here. Just be ready in case I need you late in the game. Of course, I went to my preparation like I was playing. Nothing changed. You know, didn't play that night. Didn't need to be needed. Starting lineup next day, three hits, and I was like, this dude. You know, and it was something about Charlie. Like, he wasn't a guy that really made a lot of decisions to me, like made us. We ran ourselves. We put ourselves in the situation to where, but that's what makes Charlie great. He also knew us, and we knew him. You know, why make it hard on him? Why not make the decision-making that he had, the process is, okay, what do we have to do? Well, let's put up 10 runs tonight. I mean, and I think that's part of why we work so well. He was like a dad. He didn't have his ups and downs. He didn't have his moods where, oh, I don't want to. No, he was Charlie. You win, you lose. As long as you gave it all. That's another party piece to us. Is, as long as you give it all every single night, what am I going to say? How can I? I can't go in a post-game interview and bash you because now if you don't play hard or you don't play, I can. So that's what made Charlie, I think, so great and be the guy that was great. He treated us no different. He treated the superstar just like he treated the 25th guy. You know, and that was what made that team mesh and mold.
You played in ballparks all over the league. How special is the atmosphere you guys had those years when it was sold out every night?
I don't think people understand it. I can tell you I've had a few teammates that I played with later on in my career say, bro, playing in Philadelphia as an opposing player, I didn't like it. I was scared sometimes. Does that not mean something to you, to the city? You know, it does to me. And I say, well, guys, they're on my side. You know, and that's what it's about. That's what I love. That's how much the city is. I mean, I texted Marco Murray when he got traded here, and I said this to him. I said, DeMarco, all I'm going to tell you is win. If you win in this city, these are some of the greatest fans in the world. Yeah. You know? And I got to experience it. I understand that. That's what it's all about. They want you to come out there, show up every day, and play hard. I don't think I did it any differently than a lot of guys that have played before me. Statistically, I didn't dominate anybody, but what was it? Going out there every single night, leaving it all out there.
257 sellouts.
Bruh, and I was all here for every 257 of it. You know what I mean? It was, it's hard to explain. Well, you were in the stadium, you know. I don't need to explain to you. I know we're trying to explain to everybody, but it's amazing. It's fascinating.
How do you look at the whole 5-year run of NL East titles? Do you feel like you guys could have won more than just one, or are you just glad that you were able to bring that one championship to Philly?
You're never complacent with one. You know, I know we're talking about 08, but I was lucky to win two. Two great cities. And losing in 09 still haunts me. It still haunts me. But lucky enough, I was able to get another one in 13. So it kind of decompressed that. But it hurt. It hurt for a long time. You know, not getting that opportunity and getting so close again and understanding how that run of 5 years and the baseball that we played in the city was slowly going away. You know, and then leaving, you know, lucky enough, as I said, going somewhere else and winning one. You know, I talk about it all the time with my friends. I don't think you can, unless you're from a place like Philadelphia, I think it's hard to explain to others outside of it. Because it's a special thing. What we did was very lucky. We were a special team. But again, the city made us feel that way. And when we showed up every night to play, we played for you guys. You know, we played for the fans. Yes, we played the game because we love and wanted to win. But don't get me wrong, we felt all 257 sellouts. And I remember when it came to an end, it was kind of, I didn't think it was surreal. You know, like, it was like, whoa, this is really happening.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Shane Victorino as much as I did. If you haven't seen World Champions, the story of the 08 Phillies, go on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com or check out your local listings. It's really fabulous. I'm Jim Salisbury. We'll catch you next time at The Yard.
Thanks for listening to At The Yard on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Be sure to subscribe to At The Yard wherever you listen to podcasts.